Conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. We're focusing on healthcare today, specifically to start hospital workers. It's a potentially dangerous job, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed bills supporters say will make hospital employees safer. Here with me to break it all down is Robin Erb, health reporter for Bridge Michigan. Robin, welcome to Mishmash.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Robin, let's start with just a rundown of this legislation, which Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed this week, and it passed through the House and Senate with bipartisan support. What is in these soon-to-be laws?
Yeah, we're talking about two bills together. And what they do is they increase the penalties for those who lash out against health workers, whether that's in a hospital or elsewhere. We're talking doctors and nurses, of course, but we're also talking about the other folks who take care of us or our loved ones when we're in crisis. That would include medical volunteers too. And you think about it, we're talking about people who might be miserable from, you know, a terrible earache and a sore throat to folks who are really fighting for their lives. And, you know, the data kind of paints the picture. We know from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, okay, so these are the folks who track injuries. We know from them that workers in Michigan's health care workplaces, again, hospitals to nursing homes and social assistance settings, they get assaulted more often than so many other sectors. And of course, there are already penalties for assaulting someone. I mean, that's been in the Michigan law for many, many years. You already face jail time from 93 days to up to 4 years, depending on how bad it is, of course, short of murder. These bills together don't increase that jail time, but here's what they do. They double the fines if the victim is a health worker or a medical volunteer. So, you know, if you're convicted of simple assault and you face, you know, a couple of months in jail, now you're not facing a $500 fine, you're facing a $1,000 fine. Or if it's, you know, oh my gosh, God forbid you use a gun, revolver, pistol, knife, iron bar, club, brass knuckles, I'm quoting from the law, you know, if you use those or another dangerous weapon, the fine goes from $2,000 to $4,000. And Shayna, I have to tell you, listening to the testimony earlier this year on these bills, it's horrifying stuff. You know, we were hearing from workers who, you know, and I'll quote them here. They're talking about, quote, concussions, internal bleeding, a fractured jaw, dislocated shoulders, severe anxiety from assault. One nurse talked of a colleague who were abused, hit, bitten, slapped, choked, punched. And for her, even had their bones broken. I mean, this is horrifying stuff. And remember, you know, these are workers who went into healthcare very often because they just wanted to help people.
But you noted in your piece that there's a, quote, giant loophole in this legislation. What is that loophole?
Right. So I'll go straight at it. It's the patients. But let me give you a little bit of context. You know, for many of us, when we think of health workers, we think of the nurses because they're at the bedside most. In fact, we know they were twice as likely to be assaulted physically than doctors during the pandemic. And that makes sense. Again, they're at the bedside the most. So I turned to the nurses to talk to them about what they felt about this legislation. And some of them are a little irritated. Again, the exemption, the loophole is if you're a patient, you don't face those increased penalties. And, you know, while, you know, certainly angry and frustrated loved ones are a problem for health workers, you know, some of the nurses say it's the patients who are the biggest problems. As one of the nurses told me, and I'll quote, if you remove the patients from the equation, who's really going to be at fault?
And it does seem, though, like this is a tricky area to legislate because at least some of the people who assault healthcare workers that are patients are in the middle of a mental health episode. Was that the reason for exempting patients? Or I guess walk me through sort of how that mental health factors into all of this.
Yeah, that mental health, that behavioral health component, that's a piece of a much larger and critical context here. Now, I mean, think about it. Nobody's in the hospital because they want to be. You're worried, you're stressed, you're in pain. And I can't stress this enough. Think about it. Even if it's not you, what if it's your loved one, your child, your parent, your significant other? You know, you're already stressed. Now, there's also the mental health component. You have folks who are hallucinating or under the influence and they don't understand what's around them. They cannot process what's happening. You've got folks with dementia. You've got folks who have a traumatic brain injury or the pain is blinding. Those folks aren't really acting in their right mind. And at a hearing earlier this year, the same hearing, one of the sponsors, Republican Mike Mueller, said precisely because of that, he was reluctant to toughen the penalties for patients. So it is, it's a tough call. But again, as the one nurse told us, what's left if you remove patients from the equation?
Is this a problem that's been getting worse over the last few years? I'm thinking especially in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic, we really started to hear about people lashing out at healthcare workers sort of throughout the pandemic. Is this something that kind of like went up and is coming back down, or has this become a significant problem sort of consistently over the last few years?
It's tough to say. And here's part of the problem. So very often, healthcare workers, especially in the past, have not reported these assaults unless they're really severe. You know, their mission is to provide healthcare and they just simply move on to the next patient. Now, part of that is because, again, they're just focused on the job. Part of this, as was testified in the hearing, is that healthcare workers very often didn't think anything was going to happen anyway. As one person said, you know, they called the police and the police said, well, that's kind of a hazard of the job. So very often those reports or those assaults were never reported. And the point here is it's really tough to know then without the data whether or not these assaults have gone up. But anecdotally, nurses, healthcare workers across the country have complained the last few years, especially during the pandemic, that they've been abused, assaulted, verbally accosted so much more. I remember talking, it was right in one of the terrible surges during the pandemic, of a Beaumont palliative care doctor, then a Beaumont doctor. And what he was telling me as he's trying to literally save the lives of dying COVID patients were these just verbal assaults on him. He wasn't just being questioned. His credibility and his authority wasn't just being questioned. He was being threatened. So it's, again, it's, you know, it's horrifying stuff.
I'm always hesitant to put too much stake into laws that just increase penalties, especially fines. I mean, without addressing that underlying cause, it seems like if someone is going to start throwing punches or be physically assaultive, especially with a healthcare worker, they're going to do it even if there's a sign on the wall that says they're going to have to pay a fine for it. It's this is not necessarily like the most premeditated of assaults generally. Is right. there a way to actually improve this situation? I mean, are there other ideas being floated to just make the health profession safer in general?
Yeah. If anybody had the silver bullet, as they say, or the key, they'd probably be a very wealthy person. You're right. There is some signage that goes along with the bills. And so maybe that, you know, gosh, to me, it seems like a long shot, but maybe that signage on the wall reminds you, hey, keep your cool. But more than that, you know, first of all, hospitals are starting to track this more closely. They're setting up task forces to figure out what is triggering these things. You know, what is triggering this outrage or these assaults, and how do we get in front of it? And I think it's really neat. You know, they're of course deploying mental health teams when, you know, to de-escalate crises. And sometimes those mental health teams include, get this, a therapy dog or, you know, an animal to calm things. You know, and as I joked with somebody, yeah, if I were truly stressed out, bring a dog. You've taken my focus away for a moment. And that may be just enough time to kind of de-escalate things and get everything back under control.
Moving on, but not far from this topic, there's a desperate shortage of nursing home care workers, especially nurses themselves. And a new proposed solution is medication aids. Robin, what are medication aids?
I think this is a really interesting idea. In many states, about three dozen other states already do this. First, you have to understand that the only people in healthcare, in nursing home healthcare, that can dispense medication are nurses. So nurses who are supposed to also manage your case and assess your health, your everyday health and how you're doing, they spend an inordinate amount of time simply dispensing medication. And it's not simply, handing over a pill. There are a lot of steps to make sure that you're not, that you don't have a medication error. The idea is to train nurse aides specifically in medication distribution or administration so that these kind of advanced trained nurses aides can then take care of the medication, releasing the more highly trained nurses to better manage care, to spend more time at the patient bedside or the resident bedside, I should say. Again, these are nursing home medication aides. These are not medication aides you'd find in a hospital at this point.
Right. And you mentioned in your piece for Bridge that Michigan is aging faster than most other states. Tell us about that and sort of what the connection is here.
It's a vicious cycle. And I mean, they're very, very connected. We've documented through the years just, the short staffing in so many sectors, but especially throughout healthcare, from your front lines workers, your direct care workers, to your most highly trained doctors. And when you've got short staffing, you've got longer waits. And when you've got longer waits, you've got angry patients. And when you've got angry patients who lash out, you're driving workers out of healthcare. So it's a terrible cycle.
So shortages in the healthcare field are not limited just to nursing homes. This is a problem sort of throughout the state where we just do not have enough staff in various healthcare positions. Is there anything being done to address sort of the broader shortage?
Yeah, it's really tough addressing this pipeline because the problems are so small. So there's so many challenges in front of us. But yeah, there are really bright chapters in healthcare right now. People are doing really interesting things to try to pull people back into healthcare or to encourage them to enter healthcare. Earlier this year, we wrote about interesting incentives for that hospitals are providing for workers, whether it's helping with housing costs, and that's to recruit new workers. Just last week, I did a story, and I think this is so intriguing. We have a real shortage in primary care doctors. Or if it's not a shortage, it's a maldistribution. As you can imagine, a lot of primary care doctors are kind of clumped together around Michigan's urban areas. So there's a residency program out of Oakland County to train the new doctors, not in a big teaching hospital, as you might normally think about in a residency, but in community clinics. So, theoretically, these are doctors who start their work in everyday clinics, public health clinics, developing a relationship with their patients so that they want to stay in primary care that's more community-based. And that in turn means those doctors hopefully go to some of these underserved areas, whether it's an urban area with not a lot of doctors, or folks who don't have insurance or underinsured, or maybe it's a rural area where there simply are no doctors. I think that's a really interesting program.
Robin Erb is the health reporter for Bridge, Michigan. Robin, thank you so much for joining me here on Mishmash.
Thanks for having me, Shayna.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and the incredible Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, Jack Philbrandt, and Jenny Sherman. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review, or if you really, really like this podcast, and we really hope you do, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your generous contributions and support, shows like Mishmash and all the other great work done by WDET would not be possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.